Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to FD Meets, the podcast where we lift the lid on jobs in football. And today I'm delighted to announce that we're joined by journalist and filmmaker, it's Gabriel Clark, to discuss his latest documentary, Finding Jack Charlton. How are you, sir?
Very well. Good to hear from you.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. Now, it's a wonderfully touching film, if I don't say so myself, that weaves together Jack Charlton, the player, manager, father, brother, icon, and I am reliably informed it's now in cinemas and available on DVD and digital download for the 23rd of November. But obviously I had the honour of watching an early release, and to be honest, Gabriel, I was a complete mess. I think I shed a tear three times in the first hour. And as an individual, I wasn't even that invested in Jack Charlton prior to this. But I wanted to start by acknowledging, as well as my own emotions, that a lot of our audience are quite young and won't be that clued up on the legacy of Jack Charlton. So to the uneducated, how would you describe him? And did your opinion of him change while you were making this film, Gabriel?
Well, first of all, I'm glad it made you emotional, because I think that's one of the first things that as a filmmaker you try to do, is to connect somebody with the story who, as you say, isn't necessarily invested when they first watch. And I do think that the film will appeal to anyone who loves football and who also loves a good story and a story about a unique individual, which Jack Charlton certainly was. So I think, first of all, I would put him out there as a man who achieved incredible things from a very straightforward, humble, working class background. And that was one of the appeals of the story for me. Did I find out anything more about him than I thought I would? I think, yes, I think probably how ahead of his time in certain tactical aspects he was, with the tactical style he introduced in Irish football, in international football, at the middle to end of the late 1980s and early in the 1990s. I think he did something then which we see an awful lot today, in terms of gegenpressing, or the forward press, high intensity football from 1 to 11. And I'm not sure necessarily that he was given the full credit for that. So that was something that we certainly were able to reflect upon as we made the film. And I think, just as a man who was in the shadow of his younger brother for an awful lot of his playing career, Sir Bobby Charlton, what Jack did in his total career, the entirety of his career, I think was outstanding and potentially would in the end grow to outshine his brother.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. That is one thing I've noted here, the way the tactics and his memoirs are sort of brought to life with the animation, which is seemingly his handwriting. And there's a clear emphasis in those notes, isn't there, on territory, pressing. So clearly he was very ahead of his time. Is there a modern manager that sort of compares, just to give our fans a frame of reference?
Yeah, I think there are several, but Jurgen Klopp, potentially. Big personality, humble background, a very, very good man manager. Jack was a very, very, very good man manager. That I think is also one of his great qualities. He was able to relate to players as a human being and not just as a boss. That didn't mean he didn't have that streak in him, which was authoritarian and dictatorial, which is something we also reference in the film. I would say Jurgen Klopp, maybe as an all-round figure, a big man with a very clear sort of silhouette, an immediately recognisable figure. And that's certainly what Jack Charlton was and remained till his death.
Absolutely. And you go to great lengths in the film to touch upon thematic issues as well, like the troubles in Northern Ireland and how Jack Charlton's international side really galvanised the whole country. So what I wanted to ask was, how much do you think his legacy owed to his willingness to get involved in the, let's say, more political side of football, or at least to have an opinion? You also detail in the documentary his support of the miners, for example. And do you think that football is a little bit more further removed from those realities right now?
I think football has been more removed from those realities. But look at Marcus Rashford and what Marcus Rashford's doing right now. You know, I think if you're connected to your community still, and Jack Charlton was always connected to his community, no matter how famous he got, Ashington, where he came from, as you say, the mining town, he was always connected to that and interested in it and very aware of what it gave him. And that obviously was key to his success in life, in terms of ambition, in terms of humility, in terms of strength of character, those sort of values, straightforward values. So, I mean, and I think a lot of those values you're seeing in Marcus Rashford now, in the way that he's able to naturally connect to a cause and move forward with that cause without being, if you like, above the cause, or in any way being seen to be sort of vainglorious. You know, I think it's amazing. So I think there are footballers who are able to do that and still today, maybe fewer. Regarding the political issue in Ireland, it's interesting because I think Jack made a very clever decision, or an honest decision from the start, which was, as an Englishman going to Ireland, where the English are hated, the British are hated because of the troubles and the conflicts that are happening in Northern Ireland and coming into the South, I'm not going to comment on that. And he didn't really comment on it ever. But I am going to go to the North, where there are a lot of still Republic fans, go to the North where there are a lot of Catholics. I am going to take my team up there for key matches, and I am going to almost try and rise above it, but also be aware that this is something which I have to understand. So I think that was Jack's way of dealing with it. You know, you don't have to be political to still have an impact on the political situation, especially if your team is winning. That does an awful lot to help, of course. And Jack's team winning and Ireland's identity changing through that very difficult time was the fundamental reason for this sense of a new Ireland, a new confidence, not a downtrodden Ireland that's been beaten down by the British, but an Ireland that can take on the world. We can, if we can do it in our football team, if we can reach a World Cup quarterfinals, then we can do anything. And it was that sense of belief and purpose that Jack's time with Ireland, this Englishman with Ireland, gave the Irish. And that's a fascinating, it's a fascinating element to what he achieved, without him not necessarily being that conscious that it was an achievement he wanted to do. It was something that naturally happened.
Yeah, I thought a great example of that sort of unwaveringness was evident. It was encapsulated in his interview with that young Irish child. What a piece of B-roll that is. I don't know how you've sourced that piece of footage, but he's very unapologetic, even in the face of a child reporter, about recruiting Englishmen, Scotsmen who are second, third generation Irishmen to be part of his movement. And that really, when I watched that, I wondered, what was your sort of favourite moment, or maybe an unexpected moment that you experienced making this film? Because there must have been some of the footage you dug out, you must have just had to, you know, kind of sit back and just wonder, you know, have we stumbled across this, or what a treasure trove, what a gold mine.
Yeah, I mean, that the documentaries I've made, I've always hoped that there would be more footage out there. It's always something that you know, you'll say it to an investor, or you'll say it to a TV channel, you say, listen, I know there's some great footage out there because I've seen it across an ITV library, or I've seen it in some programs I've seen in the past, but I also know that surely along with the Irish team there would have been somebody filming inside the camp in 1990. I really hope that's the case. I've heard rumor that that's the case. Or Jack Charlton made so many public appearances in North and Southern Ireland, and even though this is before the mobile phone, surely there would have been people with video cameras at his after dinner speeches when he's at his incredible best as a natural performer. And yet we were able, after a lot of hard work, to source that sort of footage. But in terms of the best footage, it was from 1990. We'd been told by his son John that Craig Johnston, the former Middlesbrough player who played with Jack and went to Liverpool, had actually been with the team working for UNICEF and had a camera during the World Cup in Italia 90 and was with the Irish team. And we tracked down Craig eventually on the other side of the world. It took a bit of time to persuade him to get to see if he had the footage. He had the footage in his garage. It took a bit of time to persuade him to, well, can we have a look at the footage? Yeah, you can have a look at it. Can you send it? No, I can't. So we went over. We sent a producer over who got the footage, brought it back. And as you'll see in the film,
incredible.
There's some incredible footage of the Irish team after they've been knocked out of the World Cup, having this incredible sing-along. They've just been knocked out. It's the greatest moment in Irish history. They've never got to a World Cup quarterfinal before, and probably, well, let's not count our chickens, possibly don't do ever again, Irish fans. And there is Jack leading a sing-along with the team, and it was wonderful to see that footage. Obviously, for the family, it was wonderful to see that footage, singing the Bladen Races, which we come back to right at the end of the film, because it obviously was a song that meant so much to Jack. And also it gave you that, it authenticated a lot of the tales that you hear. You know, it was a wonderful crack. We had a great time. We were all along for the ride, but we worked hard and played hard. You hear the players say all that, and it's lovely, but you want to illustrate it. You want to prove it. And that's what a documentary should do. So I was really pleased that we were able to get that footage. And thanks to Craig, and thanks to the people who tipped us off.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I wanted to lead to, because in that section alone, it goes from sort of riotous to poignant, doesn't it? And it, like you said, it just really adds depth to all the points you were making prior. I suppose this brings me nicely to my next question, that as a football fan yourself, do you have to make a conscious effort to remove your fandom from your filmmaking at times so it comes across as an honest portrayal rather than the portrayal of a fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as much as I admired Jack, and as much as obviously you want your hero in the film to be a hero, you know, and there are many heroic elements to his story, not least, of course, the living with dementia narrative, which we were able to film. Unlike previous documentaries I've made, which have been more archive-based, the fact that we had this original thread of filming towards the end of Jack's life, thanks to the family, was an incredible privilege to do. But also, when you do that material, you know potentially you're going to maybe include some material that the family might not necessarily want you to include, or you might include a little bit more than they expected. So I think that's where you are detaching yourself from being, if you like, part of Jack's team, and you have to be more neutral as a filmmaker on behalf of the viewer and on behalf of a degree of objectivity, which I think is important. You know, you don't want to make a hagiography. As much as you want people to love the character, you know there have to be, and there certainly were with Jack, elements of his personality that, you know, not everybody liked. So you have to reflect that as well.
Yeah, there's some unbelievable moments. I sort of mentioned it prior about welling up in the first half an hour where you're in his house, and that obviously that level of access is incredible. But particularly when he's looking at the portrait of the World Cup winning squad, and then when he recognises Paul McGrath on his laptop, I found that that hit home, the sort of, I suppose, the condition he was in at that point. So I was going to say, as a filmmaker in that instance, how did you feel you had to kind of change or adapt your approach to be more sensitive, I guess, of his situation and of his family's sort of how much they wanted to portray of it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. You're just sensitive. I think you detach to a degree at that moment. You let things happen in front of you. You know, so you know those scenes with Jack are, you know, not edited greatly, because they happen naturally in front of you. And when we use those scenes in the film, we tried to make it apparent as well that he was living as normal a life as he could possibly live. So he's, in those scenes, quite a few of those scenes, you'll see him actually directly engaging with the camera, because that's what he always did. You know, I think in a way there maybe was a degree of stimulation about the camera, and obviously watching the old footage of his team, which is what enabled him to recognize Paul, then listening to music, which enabled him to recognize a favorite song. And I think that element of living with dementia is something that, as sad as it is also inspirational to watch. And I think that was one thing that the family also wanted to put across, that Jack, as difficult maybe as it is for the carer and those around, Jack himself was still, towards the end of his life, still trying to live as normal an existence as possible, still connecting with football, still connecting with his charity, still connecting with his family. And I think that's why I hope that people who aren't necessarily that aware of dementia and its impact on people, and I certainly wasn't that aware of its all-around impact on a living family. Hopefully you'll gain an understanding by watching this elements of the condition and how it affects people.
Yeah, like you said, towards the end, persevering like you'd imagine he would. It's a reflection, isn't it? Embodiment of all his values, of his career, of everything that's come prior. And that was fantastic to see. We're coming towards the end of our time, and I like to sort of get some tips from people in their various professions in terms of how that can feed directly into our audience. So what I wanted to ask you, what would your advice be to a young filmmaker that wanted to weave their love of football and film together? Because you've done it in a very successful fashion. And I think a lot of people would look at your career and say, what a really bloody cool job. So how do they go about becoming the next Gabriel Clark then?
It's very kind of you to say that. I think, Chris, that you follow your passion to begin with. I always love football. I always love sport. And I think that's the first qualification. If you have that qualification, and it will give you the energy, read a lot. You know, I think... don't limit yourself to just certain types of websites or certain types of newspapers or magazines. Just read all you can. I think books as well. You know, get a sense of what storytelling is by watching a lot as well. You know, whether it's short form features, whether it's films, and I think also, you know, get a sense maybe of if there's a story that inspires you, there's a good chance it will inspire somebody else. Now, it might be a small story. It might be a story about a player at a non-league club, or it might be a story about a hugely famous person. But if you have an original take on that story, or you feel it's a story that's never been told before, then pursue it. Have a think about it. I think those are the basic sort of mix of journalistic qualities I feel I've got, mixed as well with a sort of sense of being inquisitive. You know, always believe that there's something that you might be able to bring to a story which no one else has seen before. Mm. Those would be a couple of the tips, I think. But essentially, if there's something that excites you, think about why. Maybe share the idea with a few people who might not know the person you're talking about. And if they buy into it as well, or they think, yeah, okay, yeah, I think I'd quite like to watch that or hear about that, then pursue it, you know, and give it your all.
Was there any sort of seminal moments or pieces of literature, like you've just said, read more, that you can sort of recall from your younger days that made you think, okay, this is what I want to pursue or do or mirror to that extent? Do you remember having any of those sort of eureka moments, or was it more gradual?
Which, yeah. It was more gradual. I mean, my career in many ways is would be, I suppose, quite traditional. So I liked English, I liked sport, I sort of combined those two. I went to university, didn't really know what to do, but I did an English degree. I liked writing, I read a lot of books. I wasn't a bookish person, but it maybe gave me a sense of how to write. And then so it was that love of writing that I then was able to transition to in terms of basic journalism. So I studied as a news reporter, got my qualifications in law and shorthand, and I was at newspapers, small regional newspapers. And then I moved into broadcasting just by doing some work experience at a nearby radio station. And that got me a radio job as a sports, my first dedicated sports job. And from there, I moved into television. And I think that would be quite a traditional route. It's maybe not the route you'd follow now. You'd possibly do more likely to do things that are more online related in terms of tech and the visual medium. But what I was able to do, I think, at ITV was do shortish features. So short stories, if you like, for ITV around football, boxing, racing, rugby, across the gamut of sports, but mainly football, that gave me a basis in terms of storytelling. And then I went into short documentaries, half hour. Then I graduated into hour documentaries. So it was that led me more into films. So that you could say was a natural path of growth. And that's not necessarily the easiest for everybody to follow. But I think doing shorter form features is a good way of developing the sort of the three-act mentality of beginning, middle, and an end. You can do a big beginning, middle, and an end in a three-minute feature, as well as a 90-minute film. And it's developing that storytelling aspect. I think if you really want to do that as a filmmaker, then think about it in short form. It doesn't have to be too grand and ambitious to begin with.
And finally, what gravitates you towards a subject? So what gravitated you towards Jack Charlton in this instance?
Yeah, what I liked about the story was that it had never been told really from a British English point of view. And Jack's success in Ireland has been lauded by people who've made some documentaries in Ireland since 1990, and on every anniversary really, the 10th, the 20th, the 30th of Italia 90, there'd be a program in Ireland about it. But it was very much football based. What I liked about this story was the fundamental idea of an English World Cup winner going to Ireland, having been ignored by his country, told to apply for the England job and being ignored to a degree for his agricultural methods and working class background, which was not quite the FA way of doing things at a certain time. Maybe it isn't still. And he went to Ireland and transformed the nation with his team. So that was the fundamental pillar which appealed to me. And then having met the family to discuss this, obviously we then had the extra original narrative, which we weren't aware of to begin with, which was Jack and dementia, which is obviously, it gives you another element. And I do like that ability, not just to tell a chronological tale, but to feed in different narratives across one film so that you're juxtaposing past and present. And with this film, I think it was one of its great strengths.
Yeah, well, to steal a Pat Bonner phrase in the film, he says emotion is an incredible thing, and it is incredibly emotional, this documentary. So I would highly recommend it to the Football Daily fan base. And that is all we've got time for. So thank you very much for tuning in, Gabriel. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for giving us your time. And there will be more information on the film in the description below. Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear Figs. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your Figs? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast? Wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.